This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Lisa Nielsen, VP of People Team, and Daniel Kador, the co-founder and COO of Keen.io. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Can you just tell me a little bit about both of yourselves, please?
Do you want to start, Lisa?
Sure. So I have a background in management consulting, change management, and a graduate degree in something called organization development. So I was really excited to find Keen, a company that is interested in people development and taking the average and seeking to find the extraordinary in people, having a very humanist background myself and many psychology degrees.
And so I'm one of the co-founders here at Keen. Come from a pretty technical background. I've been a developer at Salesforce. I was at Salesforce for about 5.5 years before starting the company. I focused on a couple different areas, most noticeably APIs. So building a lot of APIs, developer platforms, developer tools, that kind of thing. That's me.
So then what is Keen.io?
So Keen.io is a developer platform for analytics. So what does that actually mean? It means we make really easy the really hard problems of collecting data from anything connected to the internet. We store that for you in our cloud. Then we make it very easy to ask questions of that data, analyze that data, and then we make it very easy to share the results of any of those analyses. So you can very easily build charts and dashboards and share things through visualizations for, you know, your teams or for your customers.
And when you're talking about analytics, and I'm familiar with web analytics, mobile analytics. What kind of analytics are you talking about?
So what we focus on is something called, we call event analytics, which is basically a thing happened at a point in time. So it could be, you know, a click on a web page. It could be a tap on a mobile application. It could be a back-end server event. It could be you touching your smartwatch. So we collect data from basically anything connected to the internet.
And then we'll stay a tiny little bit technical for just a brief moment more before we move on to the meat of the discussion. Do you provide SDKs for all this, or is it through APIs?
We provide SDKs that wrap our API. So we have SDKs for every major environment out there.
So you span from, as you say, watches to phones to just desktops to anything at all.
Exactly right.
All right. So, okay, that's generally what the company does, but that's not what we're here to talk about. So I'm not going to say exactly what, but I know that your company does things, your organization is different. Can you describe that for me?
Yeah, sure. So different is a decent way to describe what we are. I'm always curious how people like to talk about this. One of the ways I like to talk about it is, when we founded the company, right, as me and two other guys, we've been best friends since high school. And when we started the company, we knew from the very beginning that we didn't want to build the same kind of company that everybody is building, has traditionally built over and over. So that includes things like traditional organization structures. You know, we weren't interested in building the normal pyramid. It includes traditional management. We weren't interested in having, you know, line managers or anything like that. And then it included other topics around how to run the company, like, you know, how do we do sales and how do we build product and, you know, lots of these things. So we were really intentional early on about not doing things the normal way. And there has been good and bad things about that, I'll say.
And then, sorry, and Lisa, in your role as VP of People, I presume you must have a key role in this.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun getting to figure out, okay, we know what we don't want to do, but what do we want to do to provide some structure and to provide some processes in the absence of the traditional ones so that we don't just have chaos and anarchy. So I do get to have a big hand in designing, you know, what it will look like in the absence of all of these traditional structures.
One of the things I had heard through a mutual friend of Keen.io and myself was that you have what are referred to as elected leaders, and they have kind of the ability to hire and fire in some way.
Yeah. So So this is something that we were inspired by from Holacracy. When we read about Holacracy the first time, we liked a lot of it. Some of the things we didn't like about it were it was very prescriptive about certain policies and certain processes. And so we took the pieces we liked. Certainly one of the pieces we liked was this idea of really taking servant leadership to its logical conclusion, which is people should choose who lead them. They do anyways. So let's make it explicit and build it into the process as opposed to implicit. So yeah, we definitely have a process where our company or organization is broken down into multiple groups. Each of those groups elects a leader who gets a VP title. So Lisa is a great example of
that. Yeah, I'm an example of that. So I was elected by the other members on the people team to serve in that role.
But do you, Daniel, as a C-level person, have any say in this? Or can you veto it? Can you reverse it if you so choose?
I mean, yeah. The short answer is yes, right? What's the right way to talk about this? At the end of the day, we are a Delaware C Corp. We have a board of directors. I'm on the board. We have, the board is five individuals, three people from the company, two people from our investor pool. And at the end of the day, that group can do basically anything it wants to. The challenge is how to construct an organization where that threat isn't used very much at all, right?
I don't think you've ever had to recall an election to date. So, I think that possibility is there, but luckily we haven't had to test it yet. But
that's right.
There is a line, there is a hard stop with the fact that you do have ultimate responsibility for the company.
That's right. We get to fall back on the fiduciary duty line that corporate officers have. But yeah, like Lisa said, so far we haven't had to turn over an election or veto an election. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. What about the case where, let's say, a team elected somebody and after 6 months they were unhappy? Is there a set term, or do they just at will say, all right, we're holding another election? Or how does that work?
That's the thing that has evolved in the company's trajectory. Is originally, anyone could call an election at any time. So if people became unhappy with their elected leader, they could say, we think it's time to have a new election. Now we are requesting that the election lasts for somewhere between 6 to 9 months so that whoever was elected has a chance to ramp up, get up to speed. It's not an overly distracting process and things have a chance to kind of sort themselves out.
What was that? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying that's something that has evolved.
But was that something that evolved out of necessity or out of, it would be better if we did it that way?
It was more of an, that would be better if we did it that way. Yeah.
So, it's pretty clear you are doing things in the less than orthodox way. And some of these things obviously will work out, but do you have a couple of examples of things that maybe didn't work out and you had to go back to the more traditional approach?
Yeah. I'll start with some of our ideas about sales. So originally when we built the company, we were pretty attached. Well, I'll put it this way. Nobody was able to give us what we felt was a convincing argument why quota and commission carrying salespeople were the right way to go. We'd all had, as software engineers in the past, had pretty negative experiences dealing with salespeople, aggressive sales folks who were trying to, push product down our throats. And so we were very attracted to the idea of trying something else. And, so for a long time, we built an organization, or we had an organization where we didn't have traditional salespeople and the folks who were doing those kinds of roles weren't quoted and weren't commissioned. And, we've been relatively successful as a company, and I think we've been very buoyed by our good product and our good design and our good customer support. And I think we were basically in a place where we thought we were doing sales more effectively than we actually were. And, more recently in the last few quarters, we've switched over to doing sales in a more traditional way. And it is remarkably more effective. So certainly one lesson we've learned the hard way.
And was that something then that the staff had to adapt to, or did you replace staff to bring about that change?
Both those things happened. Mm-hmm. So there were certain team members who were very excited to see that shift in focus and shift in approach. And some folks who were either not good fits for the new model or who opted out themselves.
Gotcha. So I know as well, just from our preparations for this, that one of the things Keen.io focuses on is developing people, and you differ significantly from other organizations in that way. Could you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I think that falls under the category if you are not going to have traditional line managers, there's some gaps left behind that role fills. You know, there's a lot of negative associations with it, but there's definitely some positive ones. One of which is providing mentorship. Another one is providing feedback, letting people know how they're doing, giving people a list of priorities. So we have had to construct alternate processes to make sure that all of those things still happen, even though we're a very flat organization. So one of the reasons I was brought on board to Keen was to help stand up something called our coaching program, which, you know, most people are familiar with executive coaching, where people can go and do some personal development work. At Keen, we make that available to everyone. And I think it fills a really important gap for those people who don't have a line manager to have a one-on-one with once a week to talk through, this is what I'm running up against, this is where I don't know how to prioritize, I'm having this argument with this person, how should I resolve it? So all of that can be handled through the coaching program. And one of the reasons I think it's sort of a better fit is that our coaches are actually trained to do this work, to be good active listeners, and to encourage the growth in the individuals. Whereas, you know, some line managers may be very good at what they do, but they don't necessarily have good people management skills. In our world, all of the coaches have excellent people management skills. It's something that they're very trained in doing. So that's sort of unique to us. It's you know, just this concept that coaching shouldn't be reserved for the fast track folks or for the, you know, promising executives, that everyone should have a chance to better themselves, is also consistent in what we do with L&D, learning and development. So a lot of companies will have, you know, specialized programs for their new managers where they can learn soft skills, where they can learn how to play nicely with other humans and learn how to be more effective. We make that available to everyone at Keen. In fact, the learning lab programs where people can develop these skills have been so popular, we just decided to sort of open source it to our broader community. So some of our employees were talking to their friends and their partners and their clients about what they were learning, and people were saying, this is great, I want to take this. And we have a very open source model at Keen in terms of engineering. So it made sense for us to take that and apply it actually to the culture work that we're doing as well, which is really exciting to be able to share this with the community in terms of the way that we approach building culture and just this fundamental value that every single person at this company should be doing self-development work, not just our top 10%.
Who trains the coaches that you have internally?
So one of our coaches is a licensed psychologist. She has a PhD. I myself have gone through many coaching trainings. Dan has done some coaching work.
I think it's fair to say that Lisa and Jen, our other coach, are actually qualified, and I'm just... I just told everybody I was doing it. So
actually, why not? You are the COO.
Right. What are the perks?
Well, now, you said that you've shared this with the community. Who is this community, and what does it mean to share your learning lab with the community?
Well, I can't tell you about the mechanics of it because that fell to our marketing team. But I can say people showed up and I got to teach them about nonviolent communication techniques. So I think, you know, Jen and I, the other coach that Dan mentioned, developed a curriculum around nonviolent communication, how to deliver effective feedback to one another. We talked through a few different models in terms of building trust and how do you establish relationships. And, you know, it's sort of a curriculum that we developed that we can repeat over and over. And so our community building team, which is, you know, also sort of unique to Keen, is that we have a very strong team focused on building our sense of community, decided to start advertising it to our partners, our clients. We have people that are just sort of fans and followers of Keen because they know we're doing some kooky experimental stuff over here. So I think they shot out an invite saying, if, you know, if you'd like to come take this 3-hour learning lab, you're welcome. It's free. Come hang out with us, come learn. And the event sold out within a week.
This was in person. I presume they had to come to your site.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
It was in person.
Is this something, though, you would consider offering through video or through remote connections?
I have considered it. You know, part of the reason it's not just a traditional training is because it's extremely interactive and we do a lot of exercises. So that will make it a little bit more challenging, but I have been contemplating how to make sure it would play in sort of a more webcast version. We would just have to be able to break people up into smaller groups where they can actually go through the exercises.
And when you say you've got a community building team, what else does this team do?
Yeah, so I can talk about that. Our community team has been really important in creating one of our most valuable assets, which is our developer base, right? So we're a company built by developers for developers. And when you do that, you, as a company, start getting a lot of the traditional elements of B2C businesses, right? So you're doing a lot of consumerization of the enterprise. And our community team has been really important in making sure we're doing things like actually being present where developers are all over the world, whether that's, you know, certainly we have a presence here in San Francisco because we're headquartered here. But, you know, developers really, really appreciate it when you show up to, like, you know, Omaha and just hang out and say, like, hey, we're going to, you know, we'll be posted up at this location. Come by, grab a t-shirt, talk to us about, you know, what's going on with your analytics. And so the community team has been really responsible for establishing those meetups, making sure that our customers know how to get a hold of us, building our community Slack channel where everybody can come and talk to each other, all these kinds of things that have really, like I said before, buoyed our performance.
I presume that must act as a very good, let's say, sales tool and even a hiring tool as well.
Absolutely right. Some of our best employees are former customers, which I'm always a little hesitant to say because I don't want customers to think we're trying to poach people. But certainly we've hired a few folks who are just like, wow, Keen is awesome. I really like all the interactions I've had with them. I wonder what it would be like to work there. So yeah, that's definitely a thing we've seen.
So given that you have a significantly different culture and approach, I presume that must make hiring a little more difficult in that you're looking for specific traits.
Yes, definitely. Okay. I think we saw it most when we were looking to hire the more traditional sales role because, you know, our values at Keen are very egalitarian. We're very introspective. We value a lot of, you know, we're looking for someone who's very contemplative, very introspective.
Yep.
Back me up here.
Yeah. People who like to ask why. You know, people, the introspection thing is probably our number one value. Just trying to figure out what makes yourself tick and what makes others tick. And people who get curious about the interactions they have with each other, like, huh, I had a, you know, a weird meeting with Kyle. What was going on there? So that kind of stuff is really valuable. I'd say all the stuff Lisa said is totally true. The flip side, the thing that makes the good part of it is we are very clear about what kind of organization we are. So people opt in and opt out pretty quickly. Like there are definitely people who show up and are like, whoa, you guys are crazy hippies. I'm out.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, okay.
The other thing that, you know, requires a little bit of self-awareness is that you do have a lot of autonomy at Keen. Like, because we're a very humanistic organization, yeah. We put a lot of trust in our people to make the right decisions. We don't have line managers. We try to give
when you say a line manager, are you talking to the likes of product managers, project managers that I would refer to them, or is it something more specific that I don't understand?
It's more just a boss. We okay. Don't have any bosses. Got no it. One is in charge of anyone else. So because of that, a lot of people at first are like, great, no one's going to tell me what to do. I can work on whatever I want to work on. But we found that when people first join the company, there's sort of an unsettling period where they're waiting around for someone to tell them what to do. And we're like, remember, we told you no bosses. And they're like, yeah, but it's someone's going to tell me what to work on, yeah. right? And we're like, no, that's yeah. what no bosses mean. So, you know, we have found that we have had a few employees say, I'm actually not good at self-management. I need someone to tell me what to do. And that's fine. That's great. There's a lot of companies out there who will be more than happy to do that for you. But we are looking for a very specific person who is capable of sort of, you know, scanning the environment, figuring out what the priorities are, having strong communications to work with other teams, to collaborate with them, to get whatever it is that needs to be done, done, and hopefully working on something that they are personally interested in. So we rely a lot on this concept that if you're doing something that you love, it will be your best work. And so that's why we give people so much freedom, is because we want them to do their best work. And we certainly don't know what that is. We don't know what their passions are, only they do. So it does take, it isn't a good fit for everyone, certainly.
I'd imagine also it is somewhat dependent on, in your case, the type of business you're in. In some industries, I've worked in healthcare, I've worked in finance. It would be very, very difficult for me to self-direct simply because we're trying to work with a customer who has specific needs. In your case, how is it, why is it, let's say, more feasible that an engineer can walk in, doesn't necessarily know your business, doesn't get guided into working on something, but can become productive relatively quickly?
I could talk a little bit about that. So I think it would be a mistake to imagine, I think it would be a mistake to imagine our organization as one where there is no direction provided at all, because that's not true. So from a product perspective, for example, one of my co-founders is our chief product officer, and he makes decisions about what kinds of product we're going to build, right? So it's not that an engineer is going to get hired and on day one we expect them to go into it. Well, geez, what's the next product that Keen needs to build, right? So we have a roadmap. We have our Jira that has all of the backlogs of all of our issues and all these things. The point is, there are a couple important things, I think. One important thing is Ryan, our chief product officer, doesn't tell people how to build things, right? So he's not getting involved in micromanaging. We're not picking dates for when things need to be shipped. So there's a strong distinction between the what and the how for us. And we try to leave the how as much as possible up to individuals. The other thing that I think is important is teams. We work with teams from a leadership perspective to establish metrics and goals. And then we expect teams to be meeting those metrics and goals. And if they're not, then we have to have real conversations about why not. You know, sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not okay. But it's not complete anarchy.
No, it's certainly not anarchy. But, you know, so we have certain things. Like, we know we need a certain amount of signups every month. We know we need someone to do marketing. So, you know, when we do the hiring, we're looking for a fit where we have someone who's passionate about marketing and this is a need that we have and it's a good marriage. But if someone were to come in and say, I want to do this thing, it's not one of our key metrics, but I think it's going to be very valuable, we would all say, great, go do it. I mean, there's no approval process to go to. I mean, there's something that we use called the advice process, which is pretty common in Holacracy. Which is a decision-making model that says, if you have an idea or if you need to make a decision, make sure that before you do it, you consult anyone who will be impacted by this decision that you're making, or anyone who has expertise or previous experience related to this decision that you're making. But once you take in their advice, you are free to make that decision and go execute it. So that's sort of our approval process for people. So. Yep. You know, if someone were to say, I'm going to stop doing all of my lead generation because I think I should paint a mural on the wall, hopefully they get some advice along the way that says, you know, lead generation is really important to us. Could you maybe do that at a different time? You know, hopefully they get that along the way. But again, it goes back to trusting that they are going to come to that conclusion on their own without having a boss as that sort of referee.
Right. But providing the support systems so they can get the info they need to make an informed decision.
That's right.
That leads us on to kind of the next topic we were going to talk about was sort of, if you don't have managers, who provides feedback to employees?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that I think the company struggled with in the beginning is that people, when I joined the company, one of the common complaints is, I don't know how I'm doing.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm doing a good job. I don't know if I'm working on the right things. You know, some people said I feel sort of like an island. And so in the absence of bosses, who should be giving that feedback? So we recently launched a peer feedback program, which is very different than a 360 where people, you know, write potentially anonymized statements about you, or maybe they are forced to write them down, you know, to reflect upon a year of things that you should work on. Ours is all live, in person, face to face. We didn't launch it until everyone had gone through the nonviolent communication training, so that hopefully we're using good language when we deliver this feedback. But it's a really short exercise. Everyone talks about where have I been most successful and what should I focus on for the company? What would you like to see me focus on? What would you like to see me do more of? Which is sort of grounded in the philosophy of appreciative inquiry, which is focus on what's working and do more of it. And then they get to make up a third question that they can receive feedback on. But I found that the things that they learn in this feedback process is so much more valuable and actionable than the feedback saying, well, Jason, you're a 3.2. Congratulations. Your raise is now 2%, you know? And it produces a lot less anxiety than the traditional feedback program. I mean, people don't have to spend weeks writing these things, trying to recall memories from, you know, June of the previous year. And they're receiving it from their peers who they've worked with closely. And in a way that can sort of be an opportunity for them to learn how to work even more effectively together. So some of the feedback might be ways that they can improve their relationship and partner even more effectively. I think I just said that. That was redundant.
Yeah. I've already repeated myself like 3-4 times.
But do you find in a scenario like this where you don't, let's say, have a manager who can, let's say, force a decision through, you could end up with sort of a stalemate between two personalities on a team, each wanting to go their own way and drag the team with them?
So we do have a conflict mediation process at Keen. So when two people are in disagreement, our first step is we ask them to try to work it out themselves, not to go to other people to fix it for them. We say, you know, we'd like you to use, you know, sort of the feedback model to try to resolve this on your own. If you try and it's not successful, you can bring in one of the Keen coaches to be mediator. So that person will not impose a resolution, but they will help coach through the process to see if they can help you find a solution that you can both live with. And if that does not work, then it could potentially go to a panel who would impose a resolution if it's an absolute stalemate.
You must have the most talkative engineers of any company I've ever come across.
You know, they actually haven't been the ones in a lot of conflict. I think they just, you know, passive aggressively use Slack and work it out.
Okay. So they're not that different than everywhere else.
No, I mean, we have a talkative bunch, right? They self-select into this stuff.
Yeah.
Your intuition is right. There are absolutely times where people are like, where decisions are made more slowly than would be made in a top-down command and control model. And sometimes that has impacted the business negatively. Usually it's okay. Usually the decisions aren't as important as we all think they are. And sometimes, you know, somebody on the strategy team has to come in and be like, we're not talking about this anymore. Like, tie break, I win, let's move on, right? So that kind of stuff still does happen from time to time.
The self-selection process, though, is a good point, because as part of our interview process, we ask all of our candidates to sit in on our weekly anxious excited, which is where
your weekly what?
Our weekly, we call it our weekly anxious excited.
Okay. Yeah.
So once a week we get together and we all go around the circle and we talk about what we're anxious about and what we're excited about. And it's a practice that encourages us to be introspective, and it's a practice that enables us to learn about each other. I get to hear what engineering is doing or what's going on the sales teams. But you have to sit through this as part of our recruiting process. So you kind of get a pretty good window into the touchy-feely reflective
totally.
World that is Keen. I do think there's some self-selection going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's effectively group therapy. We have a, you know, we have a candidate in today who's, you know, he's on the excited side of this, right? So he was like, I can't wait to do Anxious Excited. I'm like, I'm super jazzed about it. I can't, I'm so curious. And I've definitely interviewed people who are like, I'm a little skeptical. I don't know what to expect here. So
yeah, I mean, we may repulse 80% of the population, but we don't need that many employees. Like, if we can find the 10% that's really excited about doing this work,
yeah,
they're a great fit.
I mean, my sense actually is that most people are incredibly attracted to the event. Like, they find it, it's a pretty disarming situation to be in when you show up and you're a stranger and you find the people who you're interviewing with just bearing pretty deep stuff. Like, we don't, you know,
being some vulnerable.
People can get pretty vulnerable. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing to go to a workplace where you're allowed to be human, full of weaknesses and anxieties, and your whole self is encouraged to be here. We want to hear about you're nervous that your parents are visiting, you know, whatever it is.
Yep.
So one other thing, though, that I remember you mentioned to me in our email exchanges was that engineers have the ability or the right, perhaps, to leave and join teams at will, but there must be some constraints around that.
Yeah. So another thing I like about Keen is, like I mentioned, we try not to box people into roles if they've grown out of it. So we do have a process where people can change teams when they feel like it. There has been more structure put around that process lately. So it would basically involve speaking with your team, telling them you want to move on, finding another team within Keen that has sort of an open requisition or has a need for someone else on the team. So you would essentially almost have to interview for the new team that it is that you want to join. And then once you get sort of blessing from both parties, working out what that transition plan would look like for the team that you're leaving to make sure that you're backfilling. But it's definitely not uncommon. We had someone switch pretty recently from our sales revenue team over to our engineering team. And it's a much less cumbersome process than what happens in most organizations.
Yeah. And it comes from a philosophical place of recognizing that really the most powerful thing any employee can do is vote with their feet, right? They can decide, well, I can't be here anymore, I'm going to quit. And we come from a place of saying, well, if you're a good coworker, we'd much rather have you at the company doing a role that fulfills you than not.
Yeah, we've had, you know, someone who was working in engineering move over to graphic design. We've had someone who was working in revenue move over to engineering.
Yeah. And in practice, the roles tend to be relatively fluid anyways. So the walls are pretty short between groups. People, I mean, we're not that big a company yet, so people are definitely wearing multiple hats.
Yeah, that's true.
I imagine one of the big problems with this, or one of the questions you probably get asked, is does this process scale? Or this approach to work scale?
Yeah, absolutely. This whole idea of a flat organization, how would it possibly scale, is a question we get all the time. And I think a question that we ask ourselves. I personally think that, you know, if we're able to evolve the organization in a way where teams are focused around a client or focused around a vertical and they're cross-functional. So that team would have a marketing person, it would have an engineer, it would have an HRBP, sort of your people developer support person, it would have your customer support people all on that team. And the team can make decisions and they can adjust what they're working on based on their client's needs or based on that vertical's needs. I think that this model could scale when you have access to all of the information that you need to do to get your job done. I think this doesn't scale if we stay organized by function. So if you stay an engineering team and you stay a sales team and you stay a people team, then information starts to get siloed and people start getting cut off from what it is that they need. And that's when you need sort of the more traditional pyramid to create a trickle down flow of information to give people their priorities. But you know, if we're able to reorganize ourselves in a way where we're organized cross-functionally, I think we have a shot. And that is one thing that I can say Keen does well is being agile and being willing to do experiments, discover they've failed, move on, try something new, move on. So I don't know. It'll be a good question for another year or so.
Yeah.
Do you find that investors question your approach in any way?
Yes.
Would you like to expand on that, Daniel?
I mean, you know, different investors come with very different approaches to this, right? So some folks come from the perspective of like, listen, I don't know that it's the best model, but the model that has worked for the last 200 years in capitalism seems to be working okay. So you can go make, you know, a butt ton of money. So why are you thinking about all this stuff? And then we meet other investors who are like, yeah, you guys are going to have an incredible talent advantage in the future. You guys are going to have an incredible, you know, retention advantage in the future, something like that. So we see all different types, and usually, like, you know, with most people are complicated individuals and they have both. And when times are good, they're more willing and more excited about the experiments we're running. And when times are leaner, they're like, you know, let's go guys back to the normal playbook. So kind of what you'd expect.
Another thing you mentioned to me in the prep for the interview was something called a Keen operating system. Can you explain that, please?
Yeah, sure. So that's sort of our employee handbook, but it lives on GitHub and it's an open source model. So this is where we house all of the processes, like how to file your expense report, how to request new materials, how to put on a data happy hour, how to change teams, how to remove someone from your team if you're wanting to, quote, fire someone from your team, how to request a requisition to make a new hire. It's really the manual for how to exist at Keen, how to operate at Keen. And what's unique about it is that any of our employees can submit a pull request if they have a better idea of how a process should be done. That's probably what's most unique about it.
Yeah.
You want to talk about its origins, since that was before my time?
I mean, the origins are just, it's not anything really more complicated than what Lisa described. We knew we needed to move from a model of everything's trapped in co-founders' heads, it's all implicit, to a model where everything is more explicit. And we have teams who are responsible for various things. And we were very attracted to the idea of something community built, and we were attracted to the idea of having something open source, so people, you know, had an open way to collaborate and communicate about, you know, a frankly pretty important part of working somewhere. It's like, how do you get stuff done?
Mm-hmm. No, it's a very nice approach. One thing though, Lisa, you put quotes around the word fire a person from a team. Could you clarify that?
Yeah. So, you can, so the elected representative for a team could remove someone from a team, which is why I put air quotes around the word fire. So you could remove someone from a team, but they could not fire them from Keen. Again, to Dan's point, if maybe they're not a great fit on that team, but we would not want that elected representative making the decision if they were the right fit for Keen. So that would need to go through the people team. We would probably first work to find if there was a more appropriate fit for that person before they were let go.
Gotcha. Any final notes before we wrap up tonight?
Just wanted to say thanks for having us. And if any of our listeners out there are interested in giving analytics to their teams or to their customers, definitely give us a check at keen.io. And yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, we also have a blog on that website where you can sort of track what we're up to. It ranges from technical topics to people development topics, marketing topics. So
it's a pretty frequently updated and strongly opinion blog, from what I recall.
Yes, it's one of, I think it's a great example of letting people do what they want, because the way to get on the blog is to write a thing and then put it through a quick process and it goes up on the blog. So it's our employees, I think, really enjoy that outlet.
Daniel Kador and Lisa Nielsen, thank you very much for your time tonight.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for yours.
you're a pro, an extra in the show, so much more to know. Is this your ideal of what could be real? Oh, it will reveal so much more to feel. So much, so much, so much more to feel. So much, so much, so much more to feel.
The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was So Much More by Mabafu from the album Little Boy.